Odin, the heartbeat of your species is calling. This is the main professor with a commentary on the timing of Kali Yuga. Now I'm sitting here today in the corner of the studio, got the windows open, so you may hear some noise. I don't have the studio corner sealed off as I usually do. I woke up this morning, watched my Rigpa. That's planetary tantra jargon for the needle of your attention. Your attention is Rigpa. My attention is Rigpa. It's a Tibetan word. And my Rigpa went to subject of Kali Yuga. So I thought I'd say a few words about it. I will continue, of course, with a series of talks on Gnostic sabotage in the Book of Revelation. It's turning out to be a little longer than I thought, as usual. Nevertheless, the next installment will be like a lamb with two horns. And that's a topic on which I am, as you might suspect, rather qualified. So I'll pick that up when I get around to it, and it concludes with a talk titled, Who is the Great Whore of Babylon? But for right now, I invite your attention to a grand topic, Kali Yuga. It's a topic that belongs in the genre of sacred chronology or sacred calendrics. And I've worked in that area for a pretty long time. I wrote a book on it, centered on the artifact of the Dendera zodiac. It's an unpublished book, but I'm releasing it on Nemata. So what is sacred calendrics? It's the study, a comparative study, once again, of the different calendric systems of the ancients, such as the Egyptian calendar, perhaps one of the most famous, but also other calendric models taken from other cultures. I've drawn my estimate of the timing of Kali Yuga from a comparative study of, I think, four or five different ancient calendric systems, including the Aztec system, which is registered on that famous artifact, the Aztec calendar stone. Now, in the Aztec system, they say that there are five suns, which is their term for ages, five ages. And I've correlated that system with the Egyptian calendar, Chinese calendrics, the Greek and Roman calendric systems to the extent that they can be reconstructed, and as well the zodiacal time system, which is the master time frame. So the way to study all these calendric systems is to plot them against the calendar of the sky. So I'm providing a model of the calendar of the sky. And to see it, all you have to do is go to nemata.org, pull down the menu for Planetary Tantra, and there you'll find it on the landing page. The detail I'm going to describe is too small and too fine to depict in the thumbnail. So for the thumbnail, I'm using an image of the Aztec calendar stone. So what I'm saying is that the Hindu model of the yugas or ages can be correlated and matched to the Aztec model and to the Dendera calendar and to the star calendar. That is the primary set of correlations that I'm using. And I've worked on this for over 50 years. Now, you may wonder, or maybe you're just asking for a friend, how does this star calendar, and in particular, the model of the five Aztec ages, correspond to the zodiacal ages, the Piscean age, the Aryan age, the Taurian age, and so forth? Well, that's a good question. The fact is that the star calendar is pictorial, and you can use it in various ways. So you can use it to plot those ages, and you can also use it to plot something else, because the zodiacal ages, such as the Piscean age, in which we are presently living, does not neatly match the model of the five ages. So what I've done, which is rather an innovation and an advance in sacred calendrics, is to use the fivefold division of the Aztec ages or Aztec suns as one template, and to use the zodiacal ages, also called the world ages, as another template. Imagine them overlaid, and I use them simultaneously. You could compare this to the gauges on the dashboard of a car. Generally, if a car has a speedometer with a needle showing how fast you're going, and an RPM gauge showing the revolutions per minute of the engine, they will be two separate dials beside each other. Two dials, each with a needle. But imagine that you overlay those two dials and you only have one dial with two needles on it. Then one of them will show how fast you're going, and the other needle will show the RPMs of the engine. In fact, it's this unique overlay, and I don't know any other scholar in calendrics who has attempted to use this particular model, that allows me to determine with considerable accuracy and in a meaningful way the parameters of Kali Yuga. To do that, I simply divide one kalpa of cosmic timing into five yugas. So bear in mind at the outset that a yuga is not the same as a zodiacal age, but they do overlay each other, and that overlay is extremely revealing. Now, to do this, I use the term kalpa in a special way. Kalpa is a word from ancient Hindu chronology, that is the other system I've used, mainly Egyptian, Hindu, Aztec, and the star calendar. And in the Hindu system, it is estimated to be many different durations of time. So there are massively long durations of time defined as a kalpa in Hindu sacred chronology, that is to say, Indian Vedic. But what I do is I say a kalpa is one turn of the cosmic clock, which is 25,920 years, 72 times 360. That is an astronomical fact. That's not made up. How do I determine it? You take 360 degrees, which is one entire circle or cycle of the cosmic clock, and you multiply it by 72. The hand of the clock, the hour hand that marks the age we are in and shows exactly where we are in the age, rotates through the sky at a rate of 1 degree every 72 years. So in order to make a full circle, it has to take 25,920 years. That is one kalpa, and that is also one day of aeonic time. So, in the life and consciousness of your divine mother, the great planetary animal, you call the earth, 25,920 years is one day. That comes down to 1 second for every 108 days that you live. If you want to think that you can encompass the mind, the intelligence, and the workings of emotion and intention of the planet, you need to conceive of this. Here is 1 second of your time, of your lifetime. That is 108 days in her lifetime. That means that everything that happens on the earth, all the natural phenomenon, the sky, the clouds, the weather, the seasons, everything that happens in nature with all of animal life, everything that happens at the microbial level of nature, which is teeming with life, and everything that happens in the psyche of the human species, the anthropine species, every event in the psyche of every single member of the human races, everything that transpires in that time registers in her mind as 1 second. 1 second in the life of the planetary animal mother. And you might think that's pretty wild. I actually do. But what's even wilder is that you can follow it. Of course, you can't follow it completely, but there are ways of tracking 1 second of her time as you live through it in your time frame. And ultimately, what I'm going to tell you about the timing of Kali Yuga comes down to that. I may start out by talking in enormous periods of duration, but ultimately, it all comes down to the lived moment. And in that moment, you can, in a finite way, a finite human way, register what is happening in her timing as well as yours. So I take 25,920 years and I simply divide it into five. So the five yugas are all about 5,200 years long, which is close to the approximation of the duration of one of the Aztec time periods. Now, currently, we're living in the fifth sun, which is called Olin. That's an Aztec word, which actually is the term defining the fifth sun. It means several things. It has several connotations. Primarily, it means earthquake, or you can say movement of the earth, but you can also say movement of heart, change of heart. You see, the Aztec word Olin also figures in the word for heartbeat. And there are other connotations as well that I won't go into here. So, what is the fifth sun? Well, it is the age of the movement or change of heart of the entire world. Now, how does humanity and you as an individual member of the human species belonging to one of the races, how does that figure into your life? How does that matter? Well, let's see if I can leave you with some sense of how it matters. Now, I do advise you go to nemata.org to the Planetary Tantra landing page. You don't have to subscribe or anything to go on that page. Just click the link provided, and you can look at the diagram that I have constructed for this talk. For this illustration, I've used a protractor, which is a circular geometrical tool. And the protractor is the face of the cosmic clock. Additional to the protractor are illustrations, graphics, of 13 constellations, which can actually be seen in the sky. That's the real sky zodiac, the stellar zodiac. It's observable. It is a very great fact of nature. It is the grandest spectacle of nature, and you have seen it many times, although perhaps you have not been given the instructions that would allow you to know what you're seeing. For instance, can you recognize the constellation of the Bull, or the constellation of the Virgin, or the constellation of the Fishes? Those are the graphics of the real sky zodiac. And the graphics correspond to composites of stars in the great panorama of the zodiac, which is a selection of 13 constellations out of the 88 that can be found and have been identified in the entire celestial sphere. So these 13 zodiacal constellations all lie along a plane. You see that plane illustrated by the gold or dark amber line in the drawing. Now you may wonder, again, just asking for a friend, well, what does this system have to do with astrology and sun signs and that sort of thing? Well, it explains what astrology actually is. And from this model, you can infer correctly that there must be two kinds of astrology. One of them is based on the protractor, on the circular grid. One of them draws from the clock face, but the other kind of astrology draws from the figures around the clock face. And those are two different systems, technically defined as tropical astrology, that's the divisions of the protractor, and sidereal or stellar astrology, that is the system based on the observable constellations. So there are 12 divisions of the protractor of 30 degrees each, and those are the astrological signs in the tropical system. From the tropical system, you may know what your sign is, but you don't know anything at all about the stellar system, the stellar model, because that is a different format. The two formats do not correspond. They are independent and they can be treated independently, but there is a kind of overlay between the two formats. I realize this is a slight digression, but just let me explain, to settle it in your minds once and for all, what the difference is. Say, for instance, that you're born on June 2nd, June 2nd of any year. Well, the conventional astrologer who uses the tropical system would say you have the sun in the 12th degree of the sign Gemini, therefore you are a Gemini, and that is correct. However, there is another description. You, in fact, have another horoscope. You have a completely different astrological profile based on the graphics of the actual constellations. So if you're born on June 12th, you have the sun in the eye of the constellation of the Bull. Does that mean that you are a Taurus instead of a Gemini? While many astrologers make that argument, I completely refute that argument. It's not only false and misleading, but it is simply wrong on the basis of the models that are in use here. For many years, 35 or so, I guess, in fact, I did teach tropical astrology of the signs, and I did consult and give astrological readings using Aries, Taurus, Gemini, the various sun signs. But I also used the other system of stellar astrology simultaneously. So I worked both formats at the same time. So if you were someone who came to me for a consultation and you were born on June 2nd, I would say, you're a Gemini. That's your tropical sign identity. And you have the sun in the eye of the bull and the earth in the heart of the scorpion. Now, when I say bull and scorpion, I'm not referring to Taurus and Scorpio. I'm referring to the observable graphics of the constellations. Can you see that? So I would speak in two ways at once. Now, the fact that you are a Gemini is one thing, and that is a way to determine or discuss your personality, the dynamics of your personality. But the fact that you would have the sun in the constellation of the bull, not Taurus, and the earth in the constellation of the scorpion, not Scorpio, that says something else altogether. That is a matrix of information that transcends personality and personal dynamics and goes into the realm of the transpersonal. Well, enough said on that for the moment. Now let's get back to the big cosmic picture. When you take one cosmic day of 25,920 years and divide it into five yugas, then you have a way to determine the specific timing of Kali Yuga. What you then find is that Kali Yuga began about 3000 BC. So now in 2021, well, we're just over 5000 years. And remember that the duration of one yuga is around 5200 years. So we're coming to the end of Kali Yuga. Now, how do I know that Kali Yuga began about 3000 BC? Well, the Hindu chronology, which is precise in many respects, actually dates the beginning of Kali Yuga as February 16th, 3102 BCE, before the Common Era or before the Christian Era. That is a fact. You can find that detail in the records of Vedic chronology. So coming forward from 3102 BC, we come down into historical time, and we are now coming to the end of the fifth yuga, the fifth sun, Kali Yuga. How does the astronomical clock or star clock indicate the beginning of Kali Yuga? Well, I just mentioned a detail that could be involved in a personal horoscope, if you want to call it that. If you were born on June 2nd, then the sun is in the eye of the bull, the star Aldebaran in the constellation of the bull. Well, that actually is the point on the cosmic star clock that indicates the beginning of Kali Yuga. How would anyone read that? How would anyone determine that? Well, it's simple. I refer you to the illustration provided. Now look at that plastic protractor that I've placed on the model of the stellar zodiac. It's a flat, circular piece of plastic, right? And it is divided into 360 degrees, which you can then subdivide into 12 sections of 30 degrees each. Those are the astrological signs. They are on the clock face. Now, can you see how you could reach out and pick up that protractor and take it off the graphic illustration beneath it? And you could hold it up and use it independently with no reference to the starry background. That's what tropical astrologers do. See, astrology ignores the stars. It's not wrong. I've used it for many years as a diagnostic tool, but it is wrongly named because it does not refer to the stars. A sun sign or tropical sign is simply one 30-degree section on that protractor. the first 30 degrees from the zero mark, which is here positioned at the 3 o'clock position of a clock, if you want to use that reference, on the right, that section is Aries. The following 30 degree section is Gemini, Taurus, and so forth. So the fact is that an astrologer determines your sun sign using a model which is completely independent from any reference to the surrounding stars in the sky. And I wrote a whole book about that called Quest for the Zodiac. Fact is that the sun signs are nothing but 12 divisions, equal divisions, upon the orbital plane of the Earth. That is the exact astronomical definition of the astrological model. The circle of the 12 signs is like any other circle. You have to determine a start point on the circle to establish the grid of 360 degrees, don't you? So, for instance, if I use a compass to draw a circle on a piece of paper, and we look at it, and I say, well, where's the start point on that circle? You have to designate a start point. And then you can go around the circle, by the way, counterclockwise, around the protractor, and you can mark off the grid of 360 degrees. So what is the start point on that circle? Well, it is the first day of spring, when the sun enters the sign Aries. So the degree 1 Aries is equivalent to 0 or 1 on the protractor. And again, that is in the 3 o'clock position respective to the way I've set up this model. You'll see that there's a purple marker there that points in a certain direction. That is the hour hand of the cosmic clock. It's pointing now at a certain constellation in the sky. And this is not arguable. This is not debatable. You can actually measure it and you can even observe it. It points to the constellation of the whales, which consists of two fishes, constellation of the fishes, if you like. One of them is leaping upward, as whales do when they come out of the ocean, and the other is leaping downward back into the ocean. So you have the leaping whale on the left and the sounding whale on the right. Those are the two figures in the constellation of the whales, which, by the way, is a huge constellation, and it's more than 30 degrees in extent. So one thing you can observe is that the zodiacal graphics of the observable star patterns are uneven, and they cannot be reduced to a simple 12-fold system of equal sectors. Some constellations are very long and broad, like the fishes. The other constellation, to the left of it, going counterclockwise, the ram, is small. It's only about 20 degrees in extent compared to the whales, which is, I think, is about 40 degrees in extent, almost twice as long. It follows then that if you're using the cosmic clock to measure these zodiacal ages, well, you're going to find that they are not of the same length. The age of the ram, called the Aryan age, is much shorter than the age of the fishes. The age of the bull is yet again different, going all the way around. So you go around counterclockwise with the signs, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and you also go around counterclockwise with the constellations, the whales or fishes, the ram, the bull, the twins, the crab, the lion, the virgin, the scales, the scorpion, the snake tamer, the archer, the goatfish, and the manitou, and then you come around to the fishes again. You see, I'm using what I call the storybook names. You define or describe the observable constellation by the storybook names to distinguish them from the starless divisions of Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and so forth. Now look at the protractor again. That is the face of the cosmic clock. And the pointer that indicates the current moment in cosmic timing is now pointing to the whales. What is unique about the face of the cosmic clock is that the hour hand moves with the entire face of the clock. So picture the protractor, the plastic protractor, rotating clockwise or counterclockwise. As it rotates clockwise, the pointer, which is called the VP or vernal point, moves through the constellations against their natural order. That is called the precession of the equinoxes, because it moves into the preceding constellation. So currently, the hour hand of the cosmic clock is in the whales, but it is moving toward the Manitou, or water bearer, and then into the goldfish, and then into the archer. And this takes many centuries, because the movement is 1 degree every 72 years. That's the mean figure. Now, having established that the pointer, shown there in purple, moves in that manner, you can wind the clock back. Bear in mind that the entire clock face moves. It's not just the needle on the face of the clock, but the entire clock face moves. And if you want to go back in time, all you have to do is turn the protractor counterclockwise and move the needle back. So if you move it back until about 120 BCE, it stands at the dividing line between the ram and the fishes. So the age of the ram ended in 120 BCE. Then if you move it further counterclockwise, you rotate it, you come from the age of the ram into the age of the bull, and that happened about 1850, 1,850 years BC. And then if you move it further back, rotating the entire clock face counterclockwise, you come to the moment when the pointer stood at the eye of the bull. And that was around 3000 BC, the beginning of Kali Yuga, the beginning of the fifth sun. So Kali Yuga began when the hour hand of the clock was in the bull. Kali Yuga began in the age of the bull, but the divisions of the ages shown by its transition through the constellations does not correspond to the yugas. So Kali Yuga began in the age of the bull, and then the vernal pointer, the hour hand, moved into the ram and into the fishes where it is today. So you can see, you can rotate the whole clock face, and you can quite precisely, within a century, define when the pointer was at a particular position in the panorama of the stellar zodiac. Few people know what I'm talking about now, and few people can talk about it coherently. So, at this point, if you followed me, you may have to listen a second time, we arrive at the primary insight, which is that the movement of the hour hand does not correspond to the timing of the yugas. It shows the timing of the ages, but not the timing of the yugas. So, for instance, Kali Yuga is due to end in 2216, a little less than 200 years from now. At that moment, the pointer will still be located in the constellation of the whales, but the Kalpa will end. So when does the pointer move from the constellation of the whales into the next constellation, counting clockwise, which would be the water bearer or Aquarius. Remember, Aquarius is the sign, not the constellation. So when does the pointer move into Aquarius? When does the Aquarian age begin? Well, measured strictly by astronomical standards, it doesn't begin until the pointer actually goes past the nose of the sounding whale and enters the other figure. However, the composite stars of the water bearer, which I call the Manitou, and the whales are intermingled. So the boundary, the exact boundary moment, is difficult to ascertain. But the fact is that the vernal point will not reach the nose of the sounding whale for quite a while. The distance to the star Beta that marks the nose of the whale is 10 degrees. So you multiply that by 72 degrees for every year, and you have to say, wow, to be exact, it's 720 years before the transition into the age of Aquarius, as it's wrongly called, the age of the Manitou, 720 years. So the Kalpa ends at 2216, but the vernal point remains in the whales for another 500 years. What does that indicate? It indicates that in the next Kalpa, the next cycle of a complete cosmic day, there is unfinished business that's carried over into the next great day of 25,920 years. So, getting to the point. If the vernal point, or our hand of the cosmic clock, doesn't indicate the end of the Kalpa, what does? How do I know when the Kalpa ends? That would be the midnight hour in cosmic timing. We are coming to the midnight hour. We are about 10 or 11 minutes away from the completion of the cosmic day of 5,920 years. The way that you know that is by looking at the axial cross. So you see that cross beneath the protractor. So the point on the right side of that cross is the spring equinox. The point indicated at the top is the summer solstice. The point indicated to the left is the fall equinox. And the point indicated at the bottom is the winter solstice. So the entire axial cross moves as the protractor rotates clockwise, doesn't it? So that means that those other points, the summer and winter solstices and the fall equinox, also occurred at different moments of time, which can be computed quite accurately according to the way the star calendar works, 1 degree every 72 years. In fact, every single star in the composition of those constellations has a date. And that date can be calculated with close accuracy. And then you can look at the events that happened at that remote period of time, and you can interpret them according to the model of the ages. But the Kalpa itself is the other needle. Remember the analogy of the dashboard of the car. You have a circular grid with two needles on it. The needle that indicates the change of the Kalpa is the one pointing down, the winter solstice. So the cosmic day we are currently living in ends when the winter solstice occurs at a certain point relative to the cosmic environment. And I've indicated that by the pale yellow arrow pointing downward. Where does it go when you extend it into the visible sky? Well, it goes to the border between the constellation of the Archer and the constellation of the Snake Tamer, Ophiuchus. But hold on, it gets better. It goes to a specific point in the sky, in the cosmic environment. When the winter solstice aligns to that point, that is the end of the kalpa and the beginning of the next kalpa. That is the midnight hour. That exact moment of time, which is around 2216, as I've said, corresponds to the alignment of the winter solstice with the galactic center. So you see, the pointer going straight down is the one that tells you the timing of the kalpa. The pointer to the right tells you the zodiacal age, which are two different indications, although they occur simultaneously. So there's a point in the sky. It's located on the tropical zodiac scale at about 27 or 28 degrees of the sign Sagittarius. So if you happen to be born, say, on the 19th or 20th of December of any year, then your sun, the position of your sun, aligns to the galactic center. That happens once every year. But the moment when the winter solstice aligns to that same point only happens every 26,000 years. And that event is coming up. And that event marks the end of Kali Yuga and the beginning of a new cosmic day. Enough said, or almost enough. All of this foregoing, which of course takes time to explain. I couldn't do it in 20 minutes. I wish I could. But all of this points to another great question. So what? So what does it matter? What happens in the last centuries of the Kali Yuga that matters to you and me now in our small microcosm of time? What event could occur that would be, let's say, the culminating event of Olin movement, change of heart? What could that be? Has such an event been predicted in any of these sacred chronologies of the past? Well, it most certainly has. And I'll get around to talking about that event in the follow-up to this talk. And until then, stay calm and cool, and I'll be seeing you in the beauty to come.